ER traffic rerouting, poison spider attacks, gene testing law, and a look at Parkinson's disease. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to The Nursing Show. This is episode 22. I'm Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the show this week. We've got a lot of great information in the news coming up in a little bit, as well as a look at Parkinson's disease, a little bit of a review for everybody out there, and also look at some listener email I got in. Specifically, a great email I got from listener Paul, who was checking in both with The Nursing Show and with my other program here at the MedicCast Network, the MedicCast podcast, and was just checking in about some questions he had and some suggestions he wanted to make. And, you know, that's what it's all about, folks. This is a community effort, so I urge you to contribute to that community. You can do that in a couple of different ways. You can visit The Nursing Show site at nursingshow.com. And over there, you'll find the blog with links to how to subscribe and get the show. You can click the player there and listen to the show while you're surfing the site or surfing any other sites on the web. You can do all of that, check back episodes, get links from the show notes, look at the articles and studies and other news that I put up throughout the course of the week, visit the Nursing Show site often, and contribute and comment back. You can reach me here by email at comments@nursingshow.com. I always look forward to getting any suggestions for topics you'd like me to cover, as well as corrections. And that's important, folks. I'm not going to be able to be perfect here. I try to get the best information out to you that I can, but ultimately, I rely on you to keep me straight if there's a mistake. The other thing is, of course, this is for general medical information only, and you need to follow your own facility procedures and your own instructional beliefs and protocols that you might have to operate under. So it's something to keep in mind that I'm happy to provide review and general information here, but you need to be responsible enough to follow up and make sure that it fits in with your practice. And that was one of the things that Paul was checking in with me about to make sure that the information here was the best it could be. And he also offered to contribute here to The Nursing Show. So hopefully if you check the site here in the coming weeks, there'll be maybe an occasional article put up there by Paul. If you would like to share some of the information from your particular nursing specialty or your particular nursing experiences, whether you are a brand new nurse, an experienced nurse, changing careers into a new field, those experiences are valuable for everybody, and that's part of this community effort here. So if you'd like to write something up and shoot it to me by email, you can do it that way, or you can contribute in other ways and get back to me in that direction. I can actually set you up so you can actually write directly and post it on the blog for yourself. So all of that's available for you here at The Nursing Show as part of this great community. I'll lead off the news this week with a story that if anyone's ever listened to my show over at the MedicCast for EMS professionals, you'll know that ER overcrowding is a subject that is near and dear to my heart. And this is something that extends into the entire hospital facility, patients that come into the ER for issues that affect them that may only need a primary care physician are patients that don't necessarily need to come to the ER, and they take valuable space in the ER away from other patients that need that bed. And of course, that translates into the emergency department really trying to get patients out of the ER and up to the floor a lot faster. That causes tension. Everybody's stressed because they're overcrowded, and you know, it pushes patients out into the floors and takes up space in the ER that could be used for other patients. And this just affects everybody. So one of the things that you try to do is try to find ways to alleviate this primary care physician by ER route that so many people are dealing with. I found an interesting article from the Indianapolis area where the state there is looking for a way to divert Medicaid clients to health clinics and primary care physicians rather than having them use the emergency department as their primary source for first-line care. And so they're instituting a new program in Indianapolis and Lafayette next year. And Indiana's hoping that they can get this program in place. There's a $1.61 million grant that they're receiving, and they will be looking for ways to reduce ER visits, reduce Medicaid costs by routing these patients to a primary care setup. And we know that's not always as easily said as it is done, because many primary care physicians limit the number of Medicaid patients or don't take Medicaid patients at all. And so that's an important thing that will have to be dealt with, of course, but it's something that needs to be taken care of as more and more people need emergent transport and treatment in the hospital, starting in the emergency room and moving into other areas of the hospital. Those beds are needed for things other than a minor cut or a scrape that can be handled at an urgent care center or at a primary care physician's office. And so we'll look to see more from this. And after a year or so, we'll hopefully get a response back that this project has worked and been cost effective. More on that as it develops. The next item that I found really caught my eye, and something that I thought I would bring up more for shock value and interest than anything else. This is from Sydney, Australia, and I'm sure I'll hear back from our friend, listener Tim, down that way. But basically, there was an invasion of venomous spiders that forced an Australian hospital to evacuate patients and temporarily close because of the numbers of these dangerous redback spiders. This happened at Baralaba, I'm going to pronounce that wrong, but Baralaba Hospital in Queensland. And this place was just deemed too dangerous for the patients based on the attacks or the infestation by these dangerous spiders. Now, this is a relatively small facility, but they had to go in, close the facility, tighten it up, and then fumigate the entire facilities. These spiders are about 2 to 4 centimeters long. They're very common, and their bites can cause anywhere from severe pain and muscle spasms all the way to death. Although there have been no fatalities recorded because they have an anti-venom that they developed in the 50s. So recently it's just been a painful, annoying situation as long as treatment was close by. But certainly you don't want to be adding to the morbidity and mortality risks of your patients in a hospital by having a poisonous spider infestation going on. So, you know, when you're worried about something you've got going on in your facility, just remember you don't have poisonous spiders to deal with. Moving along, I'll wrap up this week's news item with a story about the issues surrounding the ethics of genetic testing and healthcare provision thereof. One of the issues in the United States is a wonder of, if I get a genetic test done and I'm identified as being at risk because of my genetics, does that preclude me from health insurance coverage, from being hired for certain jobs because I'm at higher risk for causing them to have higher healthcare costs associated with my future illnesses? All of these things are of concern. And this has been something that's been debated for some time. Well, finally, the U.S. Senate has passed a bill that will make it illegal for insurance companies or employers to use employee genetic information against them, either basing their medical coverage availability on genetic testing, or for employers basing hiring or firing practices on genetic information that they may have discovered. And this is an important step for consumer protection and for medical privacy. As we become more and more involved in finding out the genetics of some of our more common chronic disorders, it becomes increasingly important for us to use that information ethically and protect the patients. Just because somebody has a genetic predisposition for something like alcoholism or a future problem with their medical issues, whether it be a chronic illness like a disease process, Parkinson's disease, or ALS, or anything like that, all of these things need to be protected because these patients have a right to live their lives and have a quality of life that isn't affected by a disease that hasn't happened yet. So this is all really important information. The bill is slated to move on to the House of Representatives, where it is expected to pass easily, and President Bush has indicated that he will sign this bill into law when it comes across his desk. And one lawmaker cited this as a civil rights protection for the 21st century. And I have to agree with that, because as science advances, who knows what kind of information we're going to find out about people. And certainly we need to use that information wisely and ethically to provide them medical care without adversely impacting their ability to live their lives. So I'm excited about this. And, you know, if there's any changes, of course, you'll hear about it here on The Nursing Show. That last news story is a great lead-in, I think, for us to look at things like genetically based degenerative disorders like Parkinson's disease. Now, genetics is one of the possible causes of Parkinson's disease. It's not the only suspected cause, but clearly people have higher risk factors for certain diseases based on their genetic background. Parkinson's disease is a progressive neurological disease that causes movement disorders and eventually leads to permanent disability because of its degenerative and progressive nature. Parkinson's disease usually manifests later in life as a person reaches their 50s or later, and is related directly to fine motor control. It's related to a decreased production of dopamine in the brain by pigmented neuronal cells there. These cells are destroyed progressively, and in fact, symptoms seldom present themselves until as many as 60% of these cells are destroyed. Amazingly, the body compensates up to a point where almost half of a system is destroyed before symptoms manifest. So dopamine production decreases to levels like 80% before these symptoms begin to really seriously manifest. This primarily affects their fine motor control. Gross motor control is not affected, and this is where that lack of coordination comes in. They can move their large muscle groups, but they can't are lacking the ability all the time to finely adjust that control. So things like speech are affected, things like their handwriting, hand-eye coordination, gait is affected, their inability to make that fine adjustment to make sure that their foot hits the step when they're going up and down steps, for instance. These things are affected. And so this can be a significantly dangerous aspect because of risk for falls, but also these patients have this progressive illness that can cause other psychosocial issues as well. Symptoms progress slowly but consistently over a long period of time, and this can be very frustrating for patients as they start to see this decline. Even though it occurs slowly, they may start seeing certain milestones being reached, and I mean negative milestones, where they used to be able to button buttons on their collar, but now they can't, these kind of things. Patients have tremors, rigidity. They also experience slow movement, bradykinesia, and also they have postural instability. And these are issues that they need ongoing care for. They need to be working with a physical therapist, an occupational therapist. They need regular review and visits on how to make adjustments for things. And these patients can care for themselves with assistance in the home in many cases, but they do need that oversight. If they don't have a family member living there with them, they're going to need home health care assistance at some point. Tremors may be a rhythmic motion. It can be seen first in the hands or the forearm. It can be the fingers look like they're rolling between the fingers and the thumb. This kind of tremor is what we're talking about with these patients. And it happens even when they're at rest. So it's an unconscious tremor. Rigidity is related to passive limb movement. When you go to move an extremity, the limb may move in jerky movements because of that that rigidity to the muscle. Again, fine motor control isn't there, so they move in jerky movements. They aren't able to stop and start smoothly, and this is important to recognize. This also affects patients' face. Any kind of voluntary motor movement can be affected by this fine muscle control. Most commonly, you'll see that this bradykinesia, this slow movement, they just generally don't have the ability to move fast or do anything in a quick way. And so these patients need to be talked to about being patient, planning. They're not going to be able to get things done as fast as they used to. And they need to remember this and remember to think ahead as they do things like getting up from a chair or going up and down stairs if they have to, that they need to think ahead and take their time and think through each step of whatever process it is that they're involved in. When I talk about postural instability, I'm talking about patients that have postural or gait problems. And basically, this is because they lose that reflex, that ability, that fine control that we have to remain sitting upright or remain standing upright. And this can be a problem, an ongoing issue for these patients. Treatments for these patients medicationally or pharmaceutically include levodopa, which is converted to dopamine in the brain and provides relief from some of these symptoms over time. However, there is some concern that this also causes increased damage and actually can speed the disease progression. There are some side effects that become increasingly severe as the patients are on this medication for a long period of time, and this includes delusions, hallucinations, depression, sleep disturbances that can occur with prolonged use with these patients. Generally, these patients develop a over long periods of time a negative response, a dyskinesia related to the use of this drug for long periods of time. And this includes things like rhythmic jerking movements of the hands, head bobbing, chewing or lip smacking, facial grimacing, and involuntary movements of all the extremities or the trunk can also be exhibited. These patients also receive anticholinergic therapy, and this can be a way to control some of the adverse effects of the levodopa, but of course this also causes its own side effects. When you have any kind of anticholinergic therapy, you're going to have anticholinergic side effects. Patients early in their disease progression may actually receive dopamine agonists as a way to stave off the need for starting levodopa therapy and staving off the longer-term side effects associated with that medication. If it's caught early enough, sometimes these medications can assist with these patients. As with any progressive chronic illness, these patients are at risk for depression associated with their disease process. And so these patients may need antidepressants, regular psychotherapy or counseling. And this is something to be aware of and to ask about whenever interacting with these patients. Your primary nursing oversight for these patients is going to be assisting them in assessing when there are changes in their abilities to perform self-care activities. They also need to be referred regularly to physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech therapy. Because of the issues that they may have controlling speech and swallowing, they may be at risk for aspiration as the disease progresses and have difficulty communicating. And that becomes very frustrating and contributes back to the depressive nature of the disease. So it's important to try to do what we can to stay ahead of that curve and help these patients communicate and be prepared the best we can. And so often this involves referring them to appropriate resources, either in the hospital or in the community, that can assist them with their care. So there's a look at Parkinson's disease. It's a very brief overview. Again, you need to check your own resources. I have a couple of links in the show notes to some excellent resources I found over at the National Institutes of Health, both in their Medline Plus medical encyclopedia and also at their neurological disorders site. And all those links are in the show notes at nursingshow.com for this episode. So I urge you to head over there and check that out. And I hope that this has been helpful and a good review for you if you haven't had a patient with Parkinson's or don't deal with that kind of issue all the time. Something for you to keep in mind the next time you encounter someone with this disease. That's going to wrap up this episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank everybody for checking out the show this week and remind you that everything I've talked about this week is available by link over at the Nursing Show site. So there's links to the National Institutes of Health pages on Parkinson's, as well as links to all of the news stories. If you'd like to have those links sent to you directly in each week's newsletter, you can sign up for the Nursing Show newsletter. Head over to nursingshow.com. In the right-hand column, you will see the form to fill out. Name and email address is all you need to do. Click the submit button and we'll get you on the newsletter right away. And you'll get the newsletter and a link to the Nursing Show MP3 file sent to you each week to remind you the Nursing Show is ready to download. I'll wrap up as I always do and send you out with a great song from a PodSafe music artist. This week, Streetlight Flicker by Winter Circle. It's one of my daughter's favorite songs, and she always asked me to put this up on my iPod when I'm in the car, and I thought you guys might enjoy it as well. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. Until next time, remember, stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
Flicker, flicker. Who knew who our youth was quickly slipping? Who knew who one day thought we'd be missing? Long walks and long talks about nothing under the street light. Flicker, flicker. Flicker, flicker. Who knew who our youth was quickly slipping? Who knew who one day thought we'd be missing? Long walks and long talks about nothing under the street light. Flicker, flicker. Flicker, flicker. Flicker, flicker. Streetlight.